on race?
You know, several years ago, Congress addressed what is known as the plays true now, is that 85% of the people who were convicted of crack cocaine is not consistent with the amount of drug use among the African-American community versus the white community, particularly in reference to crack cocaine. What we know is, in terms of crack cocaine, the white and Hispanic community use the majority of crack cocaine versus the black community, who in the end are punished more harshly for selling the drug but don't use the drug more than the majority community.
In your professional opinion, do you even think there should be mandatory minimum sentencing at all?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. What it does is, again, it puts all the power in prosecutors' hands. So what happens is if you have a mandatory minimum, you have a prosecutor that can threaten to take you to trial on the mandatory minimum sentence, even if you feel like you are not guilty of that crime, if you feel like you're being overcharged. The prosecutor can use the mandatory minimum to try to convince you to plea bargain and not exercise your right to go, your constitutional right to go to trial.
What is the next step in order to get the Smarter Sentencing Act passed?
Now the legislation has been passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the next step is for the leaders in the Senate to take it to the floor for a floor vote for the Senate, and then the ball will be in the court of the House of Representatives to be able to take up the bill and hopefully pass it. I should mention also, in terms of the bill, the Smarter Sentencing Act, one thing that did happen during the consideration of the bill yesterday is that even though kind of the goal of the bill was to address mandatory minimums and to reduce the mandatory minimums for drug crimes, what we saw was during the committee markup is that three different mandatory minimums were added to the bill, which is very disappointing from our perspective here at the ACLU. It's important for us to not take two steps forward and one step back, and I feel like that's part of what happened yesterday.
This is Keegan Heron with KBOO News.
Last Monday, the Mexican government legalized community vigilante groups, an important step in that country's long war against drug cartels. The vigilante groups estimate their numbers at 20,000 and are especially prevalent in the state of Michoacán. Citizens began taking up arms and banding together a year ago to protect their rural communities from the scourge of drug violence that the Mexican government has so far been unable to halt. Since last Monday's announcement, the Mexican government has staged two successful raids on two different drug cartels, arresting top officials involved with the making and selling of such drugs as cocaine and marijuana, among others. El Tio, or The Uncle, was captured on Monday in a raid against the Knights Templar based out of Michoacán. Earlier today, a helicopter raid resulted in the arrest of Ruben Gonzalez, the second in command for New Generation, a rival cartel from the state of Jalisco. Since the Mexican government declared war on the drug cartels in 2006, an estimated 70,000 people have been killed in related violence.
Earlier today, the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority signed a contract allowing the dumping of sediment into the marine park. Approximately 3 million cubic meters of mud will be dumped into the marine reserve due to increased dredging of the ocean floor at Abbott Point in Queensland. Abbott Point is currently the world's largest coal port, and the expansion will dramatically increase the number of coal ships plowing through the Great Barrier Reef. Adani Enterprises and GVK Hancock, the companies responsible for the shipping of the coal, will see an increase of 70 million tons over their present levels of coal hauling. The North Queensland Bulk Ports Corporation will be responsible for the actual dredging of the port and has stated that the sediment will only be dumped near the reef, not on it. But conservationists are up in arms over this double-edged sword. Any sediment dumped near the reef will adversely affect the fragile ecosystem of the reef that relies on clean water. In addition to this, the increased coal, most of which will be shipped to Southeast Asian countries, will be burned and will serve to create more carbon dioxide emissions, thereby heating up the oceans and further harming the coral reef.
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe was elected as the first vice chairman of the African Union today. The election came despite a promise from the European Union to bar Mugabe from participating in a summit between the African Union and the European Union. President Obama announced today that Mugabe will also be prevented from attending a summit between the U.S. and the African Union, which he will be holding this August. 48 African leaders will be invited to the summit with President Obama, which will be the first such trade summit to be held between the United States and the African Union. Mugabe has been criticized for maintaining a monopoly on executive power in Zimbabwe for 5 decades and for allegedly directing acts of violence against his political opponents.
The long-awaited environmental assessment regarding the Keystone XL pipeline was released earlier today. In its report, the State Department reported no major environmental objections to the pipeline. Specifically, the report makes it clear that other methods of transporting the oil to the United States, such as rail, truck, or barge, would generate much more greenhouse emissions than transporting the oil via the pipeline. However, the report did not compare the environmental impacts of this $8 billion pipeline to an equal amount of investment in alternative energy sources. Supporters of the pipeline are claiming this as a victory, but opponents point to sections of the report which state that crude oil extracted from the Canadian tar sands generates 17% more emissions than traditional crude oil. Tens of thousands of people have already signed a Pledge of Resistance, orchestrated by the group Credo Action, vowing to mobilize nationwide with increased acts of civil disobedience if the State Department approves the pipelines. For more on this, we'll go to KBOO's Robin Ryan.
Can you talk about the statement your organization issued, which offers some pretty sharp criticisms about the credibility of this environmental impact assessment?
Friends of the Earth, over the last 3 years, has been tracking the conflicts of interests between the State Department and the contractor or contractors that have been hired to produce the environmental impact statement. The first contractor, Cardinal Intrex, was found to have conflicts, and their EIS was thrown out. There was an Inspector General report that criticized the State Department for their handling of the process. The second contractor, Environmental Resource Management, or ERM, we did some digging into their background, and we found, and we think they've lied on their conflict of interest forms to the State Department. And so now we're in the situation where the State Department just released an environmental impact statement produced by this company that has direct ties with the very same oil companies, such as TransCanada, that are trying to exploit the Alberta tar sands.
Can you talk about when an investigation began about this firm's connection to industry?
The ERM connection and the conflicts that ERM have started last year. And so there's a current Inspector General investigation going on into these very conflicts of interest. Unfortunately, the Inspector General has not released a report yet. And so it's a little odd to us that the State Department will release this environmental impact statement without having in their hand the Inspector General report, which hopefully would have documented the conflicts that